Accession number 2007, reel 3.
Jimmy Kelly, reel 3. So, you'd had relatively little warning that you were going to be part of the Chindit operation.
No warning whatsoever. No warning. As I say, we went up and I met the general once, twice. And then the next general come over, he took over. And this is how crazy they were. You don't need the bowl of your spoon. You could take the handle off. You put a bit of bamboo for the late in your week, because you were carrying 7 days' rations, a change of clothing, ground sheets and everything. Now, they put you in the heart of the jungle. This is the part probably mightn't take too well. But to me, we went in as gunfodder. We were never intended to come out again. You see, they put you in 200, 220 miles, 30 miles behind the lines. But they never knew how they were going to get a wounded man out. There was no way of landing. Now, the only way they could get them out was these little planes that carried one and a pilot. So if you got in a roadblock, if you got 10 or 12 people wounded, you'd no hope for anything. This was it. I mean, we lost quite a number. The first one I lost was Captain Simpson, a lovely chap, a Scottish bank teller he was. And once again, he wasn't a regular soldier, nor I wasn't either. But some of the things you've seen some of them doing, when you reflect on what they're doing, you say, well, you wouldn't do it. But that is how they flew us in there, got us in behind the lines. We'd done these roadblocks, march maybe 20, 30 mile after each one, put the roadblock on, you picked a position that you were all right. Well, two or three times we caught the Japanese columns coming marching, and that was it.
How would you set up the roadblock?
Well, you'd probably find an embankment either side if you could, or an embankment here and a field here. So what you'd do, you'd line your troops up all along the height, the rise. Now, the man, it'd see them coming. So you'd all get down, lie flat, very steady. And as the first, at the head of the column that was coming to you, Jap column, you'd let them get to the end of you before the first fella opened up. And then the whole lot opened up together. Well, of course, he'd run into the fields opposite, where they were an open target, except for hedgerows and that. Well, some of the fellas followed them through the open gaps. Well, they hadn't got a chance. You see? Instead of Captain Simpson, that's how he got his. He walked through an open gap in the hedgerow. Well, the Japs had been chased into the field, was just waiting there. Now, we'd done, four. I got wounded in the fourth one, but the four that we'd done were very successful with each of them.
Can you tell me about each of them, in succession? How you organised the first, the second, the third, and then tell me about the fourth?
The first one, we'd been in the jungle about 5-6 days, and they set up the roadblocks. And as I said, they were set up on a high rise with fields to the side, and you wait there. Whether somebody had seen the column moving up, the Japanese column moving up, and they'd get ahead of them and block them.
Would you have scouts out to look for the column?
We had some of Gurkhas. Some of the Gurkhas was with us. So many Gurkhas attached each.
Were they good in that role?
Oh, yeah, they were great, the Gurkhas, yes. They knew the countryside inside out. They come from Nepal, you know that. And they knew the countryside inside out. And, of course, they'd get among the villages, and you get the information from them and then bring it off forward to the commander.
So how much warning would you have of a Jap column approaching?
Maybe 4 or 5 hours. Or you'd know they were within the area, you see. Now all our food was dropped from the air. But the you'd set up the roadblocks would be set up with a bazooka, a mortar, and two machine guns, one top, one bottom. And
what occurred on this first roadblock?
The very first roadblock, it was to be about 35 in the Japanese marching along the road when we opened up and got every one of them was killed. There was one little fella, one of them went down to check him, and he stood up as he approached him. He hadn't been hit, and lucky if one other lad was there with the gun. But there was only the one road, as you know, in Burma, and they all had to come up and down that road, and the officer would be in a little jeep or a truck or something, and the fellas would be marching behind them. And the first ones I met was our little Japanese. Now they were the Imperial Guards, the first ones we met, and they were northern Burma. The second roadblock was further south. We went south for the next one, and it was a similar situation where we got advance warning, a day advance warning. This one we set a good one up, but it was a great battle, that one. There was we lost about 11 men there.
Can you tell me about it in detail?
We set the roadblocks up, and we were unfortunate. There was a hill just to the far side of us that the Japs got into that, and we'd done about two and a half days fighting, shifting positions, changing round, and there was two Japanese officers got killed, and some of the lads got them and stood them up beside the three. Now the idea is he had his sword, so what they do, the Japs like to get their dead with them and take their swords, and I think there must have been 30 at least 30 Japanese killed trying to get the officer's sword, because he set the machine guns either side waiting for them coming up. Now we'd done that for 2 days, I think it was 2 days we fought there, and that night time, tracer bullets, the worst thing I've ever seen was the tracer bullets coming up over the, you could see them coming at you. And
had that roadblock gone wrong then? Had you been?
Yes, there'd been a slip up somewhere. It was the wrong position, actually. To me, it was the wrong position. We should have been further up, maybe a mile further up, where we'd a bit of spare ground to the one side or the other to get them in.
Were the Japanese already on that position?
They were on that position on the far side.
So as you set the roadblock up, they were aware of it?
Yes. And we fought 2.5 days, I think. One night, the night time came, and the tracer bullets was all over the place. And the next morning, when everything quietened down, nothing there, one of the Gurkhas said that when they were fighting so heavy, they were pulling out, they were retreating south. And we got up to where the billets were, big huts, and all the mail, files and everything was all there. They'd left everything behind them.
Was that important documents at all?
Yes. Bags of mail, and between each file was a bit of dried fish.
So on that operation, what had happened to your wounded and dead?
They were buried there, and I think there was only one that was anyway that they could get out. There was no, to bring a plane in, you couldn't get the planes in, you see, small planes, and of course they'd be seen for miles coming in.
And how did you disengage with the Japanese?
Well, the Japanese disbanded that night. They were on the march going further south, and after we got to the north part and we seen all the files and that, some of the men and them took some of the files and mail and that. I think there were a couple of Japanese they captured there, and I don't know what happened to them.
Did you see them?
Yes.
What were they like?
They were well looked after, well fed, well looked after. They didn't want to be captured, but they'd no option. They didn't like killing themselves, you know. They didn't like to be captured at all. But the beautiful huts, nice bedding, all like that in them. That was way up north, in the north of Burma.
So this was at the end of the second roadblock. You pulled out towards. What did you do with the huts after you left?
Oh, we just left them for the villagers, and that the villagers will all be there. I should think the Gurkhas could speak their language and got in among them and probably sort of things out with them.
You seem to have, on both the first two roadblocks, caused a large amount of Japanese casualties.
Oh yes, there's quite a number. I should think between the two, 40 or 50 casualties was. And they were, then what was happening, the Japs then was retreating down out of, well I should imagine, out of Burma, because we followed the next one down further south, and we set another one up there, and that was successful.
How did that go? How did you go about doing that one?
Once again, it was a good position, similar to the first one. We had high hills, trees on one side, and fields on the other. Flat field, so you could drive them into the fields, and they had Bren carriers with them then, the third roadblock.
You said they had Bren gun carriers with them, were they British ones that had been captured? Or?
No, they were their own.
So Japanese half tracks?
Yes, it was like a tank, a little tank, and they'd two of them with them there. And we happened to get the tracks off of both of those. Some of the lads with grenades and that.
What were you doing in this roadblock? What was your role?
I was in charge of a section. And we give the signal that who fired the first shot. Generally, we set it off with a bazooka. And then after that, the machine guns and that had opened up.
So what were the most important things when you were setting up one of these roadblocks that you had to take into consideration?
Safety of the men themselves, your own men, but to be maybe 10 yards back from the road itself with a clear view. Nothing on your other side. Everything must be on your... For crossfire, anything like that, you have to be careful of.
And... With these, you'd mentioned on one of the roadblocks that there was you evacuated one of the casualties.
Yes.
How was that done?
Well, he carried them. There was some South Africans, stretcher bearers, and they carried them for about a day and a half until we got into a clearing where we could bring one of the planes down.
Did you have to cut any of the undergrowth away plane to come down?
Yes. Yeah. You see, if you'd done it in an open field, you'd be seen for too far away, miles away. So you'd get it cleared in a little wood area and put a cross down so you could come and land on the cross. But it could only take one at a time, either a line or a sitter. So if you got four or five wounded, well, there's no hopes. But this is what I've always said, that the eruption that caused and the lives that was lost, you often wondered if it was really worth it. When you think how it collapsed after that.
Because you seem to be, in your column, doing very well.
Yes.
Against the Japanese. You'd had three contacts and caused an awful lot of casualties. With that, what was your opinion of the Japanese? Because I know I've heard a lot of people who said about the Japanese how they were still considered supermen. But you seem to have been doing very well against them.
You see, I think the point was it was surprise. Once you surprised them, and they weren't as an army, it was a unit, part of an army. So you had probably two officers, NCOs, and maybe 30 men. So you weren't really fighting one big army, you were fighting a small section of it. And the element of surprise was the main thing. And as I say, if you got them in a proper situation where, like, there were an open field like here, they hadn't any hope as regards surviving that. Now, I believe two or three did get away in the sector third roadblock, but where they went, I don't know, whether they got among villages or not. That's the other thing you had to be very careful with, was that if you went to a village, you didn't know whether they were with you or against you. You could be with you this minute, and Japs would come 10 minutes after, and they'd tell the Japs where you were and what you were doing and things.
So you pulled out from the third one. You mentioned your officer had been killed. Which robot was he killed on?
The first one. The very first one. Captain Simpson. There was two officers, really. The next one was in the third roadblock. He was from the Channel Islands. Strachan was his name. Lieutenant Strachan. And he got I think it was in the tracer once that he got. But the tracer, I've never seen anything more deadly in all my life as him. You were on the bank, and of course you were stripping the bank all the way through. I think there was 10 or 11 got it there with the tracers. And you couldn't dig in, it was on a hill. So you had to lay as flat as you could. And of course, when you see the stuff coming at you, I don't know if you've ever seen a tracer, but have you? You see them coming at you pitch black. But Lee, that's where he got his as well, Lee.
So what happened after the third roadblock?
After the third roadblock, we pulled out and we had about 6 or 7 days getting sort of round again. And we used to get all our food from the air. Every 5 days you got a drop.
How would you organise the airdrop?
There'd be a position to be done over the field phones, and it'd clear an area and put either a white cross down for them to land on them, but they never landed on them, maybe 2 miles away. And you always knew who was doing it. It was the British pilots, English pilots. You were near enough your target. Americans, Australians, a mile and a half away. I mean, you'd probably see 2 days after you'd be up marching, you'd see some of the parachutes up in the trees, still with the food in them. That was K rations.
What did that consist of?
K rations was very high protein biscuits, like crackers, a little tin of meat paste or bully beef, something like that, 5 cigarettes, and bullion powder, which is something to an oxo cube. But eventually they brought tea and coffee in, because they know tea and coffee in their packs, and you get 3 of them, it'd be breakfast, dinner and tea. You get 3 of those, and they were just about the size of a packet of Jacob's crackers, not quite as big, pretty flat. And you'd get 15 of them, 5 threes is 15, to carry. That was your 5 days' rations.
And how did you do for water?
Well, you got water as you went along, wherever the stream was. I mean, you get up near enough, you get near a stream for the wash after you come out of the roadblocks. But I've seen me getting washed. Is there a toilet here?
With the water, did you have to purify it?
No. There was purifying tablets there, yes, there was, yes. The point is, you stop near, after you come out of the roadblock, you'd stop near a river to get washed, cleaned up and all like that. But I've seen me getting washed, dressed and everything first thing in the morning, nice and dry, 10 minutes up, have to cross the river up to here and water again, so... and the water, the river's there in the valley, and of course you get that early morning mist on them, which was great for moving, deadened the sound, so you could get travel quite a long way along these rivers and that.
So I've heard that some of the columns shaved and some of the columns didn't shave. What was the situation in your column?
We shaved. This is the point about it all. They say, put muck in, black in your face. You say, well, no, you have to shave. Some of them shaved, some of them didn't. Now, we didn't wear tin helmets. We wore the soft hat for the back of the neck and that, for the sun on the back of the neck and that.
What other equipment were you carrying?
You'd be carrying your full lot of ammunition, your water, full out of ammunition, all your cleaning gear, a change of clothing, and you'd be carrying each so many members out of some for the machine gun. Now, I think we had two or three mules, and they were carrying the bazookas and the mortars and the ammunition for the mortars and all like that. But I think we shot one or two of them. They couldn't make it either, for some of the terrains were terrific.
So you pulled out, you said you'd had an airdrop after you pulled out from the third roadblock on the way to the fourth roadblock.
Yes. Well, on the fourth roadblock, it was a real heavy one, this. There must have been a load of Japanese in the area that we haven't got the information on. But we held that for over 3.5 days.
What was the position like?
The position was, once again, I didn't think it was an ideal position. We were up a mountainside, but there was a valley down below us, and the ground rose to the other side as well, which was not good. What I mean now, the first two nights, I think there must have been thousands of rounds of ammunition fired, and after the second, I was put down to relieve the first line with my lot, and I went out for the clean up, and here's two or three dead Japanese dead, been there for a few days, they were swollen right out, and we got the bazookas to clean it up a bit. And
how did you do that?
Well, all you could do was ease the bodies down in some place and bury them over, cover them over. And I suggested burning some of the bracken rubbish so you had better views, because the lads had been firing that round and round of ammunition, and some of the REs was there, the engineers, and they'd put hand grenades tied together as booby traps. I don't think they knew where they put them even. But in any case, we got over that, lad. That's shortly after that it was that I got wounded.
What had actually happened in the position? Had the Japanese, had you ambushed the Japanese, or were they aware of your movement?
They were aware of us. We set it up, and before we could do much about it, they come in from behind us, and we had to turn right away around them. We'd done two patrols, and I think they must have seen one of the patrols, and they came in from there. But that was a real humdinger, that one. They lost quite a few there, and the Japs pulled out there as well, and I think they pulled out to reinforce. Now, at night time we marched, well, we came out, because I got wounded there, a bullet wound.
So how did that happen?
We were going, the company I was with, we were going down into the valley, and there was a sniper up a tree. I got one on the side.
Was that after the main force of the Japanese had pulled out?
Yes.
Did they leave snipers behind?
They used to tie them into a tree, so that if you killed them, they never fell. So you didn't know whether you killed them or what had happened. Oh no, that was one of the regulars. Another regular trick of theirs was that they'd get to know your name. That's why you should never shout out anybody's name, because they get to know them. They shout, "Over here, Sergeant, over here." And you go over there, and it wasn't your own men, it was one of them.
So you've moved down into the valley, and the sniper, had he targeted you specifically because you were leading the section?
I wouldn't be sure. I was bringing up the rear, actually. I was bringing up the rear. I'd gone round the side. And some of the lads had done the position and cut all the bamboo down. And of course, bamboo was about that, you grow very quick about that height.
About half a foot high. Yeah.
And I was going down through that with some of them. And it must have been to me other side. I turned round, and first there was a shrapnel in the chest. And
what was that from?
A grenade.
Had he thrown a grenade as well?
Some of the grenades went off, yes. I got in the dunes, in the chest, and that wasn't bad, that really. And as I went further on, the fella got me with the bullet. And I couldn't go any further then.
Where did he actually hit you?
Through here.
In your back?
Yeah, through the side and out the front.
So you've gone through your side and out through the front?
Yeah, took about two ribs, was it? Broke two ribs where the spleen is. Took the spleen. But then I'll come back. I went back and one of the lads, the lads was with me there, put a dressing on it. And I stayed there for about, an hour and a half. And then we got back to the main group again. And after I got back there, we were pulling out. So they decided to put me on a stretcher. So I was stretchered for about 3 days up to Kohima.
So did you leave the rest of the section and the rest of the unit?
Yes.
Who were the stretcher bearers?
They're two big South Africans. So they were huge big men, must be 6 foot odd. And they carried me for 3 days. Sergeant Kennedy, he was wounded and all, and he was in charge. There was about five or six of us wounded.
How did they carry you?
On a stretcher.
Was the two of them or four of them?
Two. Two big, huge fellas they were. And they carried me all the way up to Kohima, Kohima, yes.
How did you feel when you'd been hit?
Very numb. It spun me round, it was numb. And you don't think much about it then. You wonder how far are you going to go. Because you wondered yourself, when you've seen what has happened before, if you're too badly wounded, well, you can't be left, can you?
So were you worried about the possibility you might be left?
Well, if they wouldn't leave me, they'd have shot me. The only way to get out, you don't want to be left with the Japanese. So what they'd do, they'd probably shoot you. And 3 days it was, I think, Guy. About 3 days we got up to Kohima.
How were you feeling on the journey?
Numb, very numb. And it's hard to say, isn't it? You feel very numb. And, of course, then you're wondering, things go through your mind. Are you going to make it? Gangrene set in, anything. But I was lucky, I wasn't the lucky ones. I think there was two others wounded, both of them lost limbs with gangrene.
Had the bullet gone through you, completely through?
Right through, yes.
So was your wound relatively clean?
Yes. It's a big hole in me side. And it had gone right through, and it was, as I say, pretty clean. A first aid bandage had been put on. And we went up to... I was in Kohima for about a week, I think it was.